Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, where we discuss everything in the Hooniverse. Join us each week as we bring you news, rumor, and recap. And now your hosts, Jay Witten. You win this one, Internets! And Melissa Mazza.
We were playing fast and loose with the term.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing episodes that have already aired, as well as news that's public knowledge. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again. Have something you want to say? You can email us at gallifreypublicradio@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at @gallifreyradio or leave a comment on each episode at gallifreypublicradio.podbean.com. This week we discuss the fun that was dinosaurs on a spaceship and ask, are you interested in Brian's balls?
Hello and welcome to the Gallifrey Public Radio podcast with me, Melissa, and Jay, as always. How are you tonight, Jay?
I'm doing good, doing very good.
Good. We're recording a little late this week, so apologies to anyone, but so tomorrow is the new episode. So tonight we're going to talk about dinosaurs on a spaceship, but already I am excited for tomorrow's episode. What about you?
Oh, very much so. This one is the one that we saw most about in the previews and things like that, so I have a feeling this one is going to be pretty major.
So do you have any Doctor Who news for this week or anything?
Well, not really news. I haven't come across anything really. There were a couple things. There's a theory that I read about Oswin from Asylum of the Daleks, though, that I wanted to go ahead and share, though. Because, you know, everybody's got their own theory about what's going to happen between now and when she comes back as the companion and how that's going to go about. This is one of the most interesting ones that I've found, and I'm just going to read this straight off the internet. So, I think Oswin is the new companion, and they will meet chronologically after this episode, and she will remember all of it, having saved herself from the Daleks. So, basically, she's not going to be a relative. She's not going to be... You know, he's not going to go and save her before Asylum of the Daleks. This still happens, everything is still canon, and the Doctor is going to come across her after these events. So, and here's the explanation for it. This hinges on her ability to erase the Doctor from the Daleks' collective memory, because she was really a Dalek and had administrator access to their network. Now, if she was able to make them forget one person, could she also make them remember another, specifically remember her? There are two points in this episode where remembrance is mentioned. There was an obvious one at the end where Oswin looks at the camera and says, "Remember me." Right? I mean, that's the obvious one. The other one actually happens at the beginning. It's 5 minutes in a response to Amy's question, "So what do? The Doctor responds, "Make them remember you." Then he turns to the Daleks and says, "What are you waiting for? At long last, it's Christmas." Yeah, okay, so these are both things that you touched on last week. You know, the remembrance was, you know, at the beginning of the show and then at the end of it. So, I mean, it's bookended with memory here. So, in the context of the scene, it sounds like he's challenging the Daleks because he's in their clutches. He's a Christmas gift to them. But as foreshadowing, it actually means something else. The idea that someone needs to be remembered at around Christmas time. And Oswin is the likeliest candidate, since she's the one that stresses the importance of the Doctor's remembering her. For the first point, we already know that Jenna Louise Coleman's character will be introduced in the Christmas special. We have to theorize that Oswin can come back if, and my screen goes black, if someone can get the Daleks to remember her. Maybe what happened is that Oswin was able to somehow copy herself to the Dalek network before the planet blew up. And once the memory of her is retrieved from deep within the Dalek psyche, the Doctor figures out some way of putting her back into corporeal form. It's not the first time something like this has happened. I mean, this actually sounds feasible to me now. You know, especially with, you know, with the tie-in of the Christmas mention.
Yeah, I agree. Wait, no, go on, say what you were going to say.
I mean, we know from news reports and stuff like that that the new companion's name is Clara, right? Not Oswin. It's actually, the name that we got was Clara Oswin. So that could just be a red herring to throw us off so that we didn't know what we were looking for. It could be that Clara is a mention to the character from the Nutcracker, because, I mean, you know, they've always taken Christmas stories and given them a Doctor Who twist.
Yeah, that's that Christmas connection, yeah.
Right, so, I mean, you've got Clara from the Nutcracker, who is a girl living in a dream world, and Oswin, who has formed a dream world for herself, you know, so it wouldn't be that hard to make that connection. It could also be that her name was actually Clara Oswin, and she couldn't remember correctly as they were, you know, changing her and all that stuff, and that one little bit of information just got twisted so that she couldn't remember her name properly. So, yeah, I mean, there's lots of ways to figure that out.
That's possible, too. Like, you know, what parents would name their child Oswin Oswald?
Yeah, that wouldn't be good.
But I like that. I like that theory, because we were talking about what the connection with Oswald with Oswin could be. I mean, that's as good an explanation as any. Right now, I'm not ready to commit to any theory.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing that gets me is the fact that, you know, yes, the Doctor made reference to Christmas. Not a big deal, you know, it's can easily be overlooked. Then you look at Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, and there's a point where Brian makes reference to, or he tells Roy something about put it on your Christmas list. Roy says, I don't have a Christmas list, and you hear the Doctor, I do!
Yeah.
And we've seen from the trailers, you know, in A Town Called Mercy, the Doctor is talking about what's going on. You know, he's like a cyborg gun shooter in Wild West town. Has somebody been peeking at my Christmas list? I mean, that's three episodes. All three of them make some reference to Christmas. So, like, they're hitting a point here somehow.
And you think that point is the new companion. I definitely buy that, yeah.
I mean, it's possible. Now that somebody brought it to my attention, I'm really starting to notice a lot of this stuff, and it's really starting to make sense. So I just want to give credit here. The theory that I was reading was from Lou on Reddit. So if you want to go and look it up and read it yourself, you know, it's there. The username is Lou, so real easy to find.
Damn, how early did you get that name?
That's what I'm wondering. So, yeah, but that was my interesting bit from the previous cast. There's also a video I saw, and I'll put this in the link dump. It's labeled, where I found it, it was labeled as Matt Smith reading the end of the script of the fifth episode. And it's, you can see they're in Central Park. It's Matt Smith and Karen Gillan sitting on a park bench, and Matt Smith is reading a piece of paper. And he becomes very, very emotional. Like, you can see his hands start to shake. He becomes overwhelmed and starts crying. So, but then at the very end, you can hear someone say cut, and Matt Smith makes a move, and then the video cuts out. I don't know, you know, it could be a scene from the episode, because they did a lot of filming in Central Park. But there's a lot of people standing behind Matt Smith, and just standing there, not walking by like extras. They're just standing behind him, watching him. So I tend to think, I'm not sure. I mean, on one hand, you've got Matt Smith becoming overwhelmed and crying at reading the exit of the ponds. On the other hand, you've got the Doctor reading something, becoming overwhelmed and crying. Either way, I'm going to bawl like a baby when this happens.
Yes, this is already an emotional scene. I have not seen this. Now I have to look it up.
Yeah, I'll definitely put this video in the link dump.
Oh, man.
But there's a couple that I've seen. There's the trailer for episode 5 that just, you know, it tears me up just watching it. It doesn't even show anything, and it's already destroying me.
I've been trying to stay really far away from all that stuff, so I've been kind of in seclusion and haven't seen even the most basic. Now, wait, I think it's a screenshot from what you were talking about. It's Matt Smith sitting on a bench crying.
Yeah, yes. With Karen Gillan sitting right next to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't look like it's going to be fun.
Wow. So, All right, so now let's get into the episode. Not whatever he was reading, but Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. But before we get into the actual episode itself, what do you think of the – have you heard the theory that – oh, now I'm starting to hear an echo of myself. I'm sorry. This is weird. Okay, so there's a theory out there that the doctor, he's 10 months from the last time that he saw Amy in her timeline. But they're saying that he, for him, this is after he's already said goodbye to her. And that explains some of the plot turns and little acting points of this episode. That it's like episode 1 and then 5, 2, 3, 4 are supposedly the order that he has seen Amy in. Have you heard about that?
I have heard about it. And, you know, it kind of makes sense that he's giving them time at home, you know, trying to let them have a life. You know, it kind of fits in with that. I don't know how I feel about it. You know, we've seen him do this before where he comes back, you know, goes back to a previous point in Amy's life, and we see it from Amy's point of view. So, you know, it's not unprecedented for this to happen, but, you know, it's... I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, that's why I think, because it is not unprecedented for this to happen. I think Stephen Moffat really likes to play around with the things you can do with time travel, and that's what the Doctor does with Amy, that he shows up at different points. And this is what he also does with River Song, you know, not for nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, shows up at different points in her timeline, and I think the way that he's acting in this episode is very much akin to the way he was acting at the end of the last season, where he knows that he's going to be shot and all that stuff, and then we find out that this doctor was actually 200 years older than the doctor that we had seen the whole previous episodes of the season. I really had kind of hints of that when I was watching this. So that's what makes me think that it kind of could be true, because, like, he's acting a little bit different than he normally does, and maybe it's, you know, this is an older doctor. Go back and revisit Amy and Rory.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible. As soon as I heard it, I was like, I can see it happening. I can see that being part of it. But I'm hoping it's not, because I want to, well, I don't know. I mean, it could go either way. I just, my gut response is no, I don't want it to happen, because I don't want to see it coming. I don't want to know what's coming. I don't want anyone else to know what's coming. You know, it's kind of weird. And then we would get the Doctor basically saying his goodbyes in the fourth episode, and it would just kind of throw things off. And it's, I don't know. At this point, I'm just being a whiny fanboy.
No, I kind of agree, but if anyone, you know, obviously, if you're on the internet, I'm on one side, you're on the other, so I'm gonna...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, well, I mean, this Dinosaurs on a Spaceship was a fun episode. You know, it was your typical popcorn-style movie kind of thing, where it's just, it's almost like a Saturday afternoon movie on TV. You know, you're not expecting much, it's just going to be fun. You know, and then you walk away from it, it's like, okay, moving on with life, end of it, you know? So it definitely accomplished that real well. It's not going to be the most memorable episode ever. It's not even going to be in the top 50, but it was fun.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but I really did not like this episode. I didn't enjoy it, and I'm surprised at the way that you actually categorize it, saying, you know, it's not going to be one of the top remembered episodes or whatever, because from what I've seen online, people loved this episode, and I feel like an outcast, because I just didn't, it's not that I didn't enjoy it, there were definitely fun moments, but I was expecting more, and it just didn't deliver.
Yeah, it had too much going on. I think that was part of my problem, was there was just so much going on that it was really hard to track. You know, you had two completely new characters that we've never seen in Rydell and Nefertiti. You know, then we've got, you know, Rory's dad, Brian, come in. You know, so you've got all these new people coming in to an area we've never been. It's like the only constant you have is the Doctor and Amy and Rory, and then everything else is completely new. So it was a lot to try and take, and they tried to put a lot of information into it. So it was kind of the same thing as Asylum of the Daleks, where it felt like a movie crushed down into 60 minutes.
Yeah.
But the thing that Asylum of the Daleks had was a strong, compelling story that you got emotionally involved in. The only emotional part I had in this was when the Triceratops got shot.
Oh, God, yes. No, that I give that to you. That was heartbreaking.
But, you know, that doesn't speak much for the episode when that's the most emotional point in it. You know, so it's like I said, it's just going to be a fun episode. You're not going to get emotionally involved. It's not going to be memorable. So, you know, it is what it is.
It felt almost nostalgic, or not nostalgic, like, because I never actually saw the original Doctor Who, but more like, it felt like something out of the 80s. Like, the two robots and the guy, I don't know, like you said, it seemed like a Saturday afternoon movie, or just like, you know, maybe it's just because everything from my childhood has to do with dinosaurs and stuff, you know, you're a kid. Like, but this episode reminded me so much of, like, you know, watching a movie in 1989, you know?
Yeah, it did. It really did. I mean, it had its moments, you know, when they first get onto the spaceship and the Doctor's making his introductions and stuff, and he points at Riddell and Nefertiti, and he's like, "Yeah, they're with me." Amy says, "With you? Are they the new us?" And, "No, they're not. They're just people, not pawns." You know, so I mean, that was kind of cute that, you know, that he considers Amy and Rory not people, you know.
Right.
Which, I mean, in the verbiage of it, in the actual lexicon, that's an insult, but you understand what he means by it. Like, there's so much more than that.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a sweet little thing.
Well, and then he continues the whole Pons thing through the episode with Rory's father.
Yeah, Brian Pond.
I'm not a Pond. Yes, you are.
Of course you are, yeah. Yeah, that was great. Let's see, and then the Nefertiti asking if Amy was a queen, and obviously her response, yes, I am.
Yes, I am.
And then later on saying, you know, she's like, are you the Doctor's queen? No, I'm Rory's queen. Wife. Rory's wife. Don't tell him I said queen, I'll never hear the end of it. I don't know, I kind of liked the robots. I mean, they were campy and, you know, hokey, but it fit with this episode. You couldn't have dropped them into many episodes, but this one they seemed to fit in. You know, the little whiny, temper tantrum prone robots.
What did he call them?
The little tantrum machines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I thought that, again, they were very 80s or Melissa's childhood, the early 90s.
You know, when they first come across the Triceratops, I thought that was a great moment. You know, the dinosaurs were very well done. I mean, yes, you can tell the difference between when it's a physical dinosaur or when it's CGI. We're not going to, you know, critique them on the special effects skills. You know, it was done well enough that it didn't take me out of it.
I thought the special effects were great. I have no complaints about that. And I have no complaints about the dinosaur stuff. I thought it was all really, and it was really funny, the whole golf ball gag. And
yeah.
Playing fast.
Do you have plant matter in your pants? Just my balls? Yeah, I love
my jaw dropped at that point. I'm like, oh, they're getting edgy.
I liked how the Triceratops was nothing but a big, giant dog.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I don't see that happening, but okay, it works.
Well, because it's funny when he jumps on his back and hopes that it doesn't move.
How do you start a Triceratops?
All right, so it did have its fun moments.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it was fun. I can't fault that. It did have its fun. It's just not overly impactful, you know. there were the thing that got me about this that really, I don't know if it took me out of it, but it kept getting on my nerves, was every time they looked at a computer screen, it was from in the computer screen. It was through the display at the characters. And it just bothered me.
You wanted to see the screen more?
Well, I wanted to see either or. It's like I couldn't see either one clearly because they're both there. So it's like, okay, either show me the characters or show me the screen. I don't want to see both of them superimposed.
Do you know, right as you were speaking, I just clicked onto a webpage, and it was like a picture of that, of Amy's face through the screen, and like it's all blurred because you see both things.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like every time they're looking at a computer screen, I'm just like, okay, I'm relying solely on audio here because I can't make sense of what I'm seeing, you know. And it was a cinematography choice. It's not horrible. It was an interesting shot. It irritated me, but...
All right, point noted.
No. Like I said before, you know, there was a Christmas reference in this one when they're standing on the beach. You know, that did get thrown out there.
Yeah, well, I have two things to say about that. First of all, that is Bad Wolf Bay, and they use this beach for every shot on Doctor Who that ever needs a beach. Right away seeing that, I'm like, is Rose coming back? Like, they need to find a different set. Like, I'm sure there are other cheap beaches in Wales, like, they can film at. The other thing is, like, again, like, I really, as a total fangirl, was thinking, like, oh my god, this is something to do with, you know, Bad Wolf or whatever, but no. And then my other point about this is, that he says I'm 31 years old. But the last time we talked about their ages was, I think, in Let's Kill Hitler, and they were supposed to be like 21 years old. So something is not adding up with Amy and Rory's ages, I just have to say. I don't know if that's a continuity error or if this is something that they're doing on purpose, like a timey-wimey kind of thing. I don't know.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, trying to keep the timeline straight, especially since, you know, Matt Smith is... difficult at best. You know, it's, you start off with not knowing where you are. You know, the very first episode, he jumps, you know, 12 years into the future, thinks that it's 6 months later, then, you know, vanishes for half a second and he's gone two more years. So it's like, right off the bat, you're already thrown for a loop and having trouble keeping track.
Yeah, that's true. That's very 11th Doctor.
Problems with the Heimlich regulator and whatnot. I kind of liked how they split them up so that you had two separate groups. So it wasn't, you know, six people clamoring for screen time all at the same time. You know, it did really help kind of straighten things out because you had a lot going on. So to be able to split it up into two sections or two chunks and say, okay, this group and this group. You know, I know I can follow this one, now I'll follow this one, now I'll follow this one. So that did help out quite a bit.
Yeah, this is the Lost school of storytelling, where you have A team and B team. And I like that they did this also because it gave the chance for Amy to really shine. And she calls them her companions.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that really stood out to me was Amy really took charge. You know, you can see her time spent with the Doctor did not go to waste. You know, when she walks up and starts just going to town on the console, you know, if I've learned one thing with the Doctor, it's, you know, when you go into a new place, push buttons.
That, again, though, was a little over the top. That she knew all the codes and whatever. Like, how does she even know what to type? She's pushing buttons, like, but it all happens to be the right combination.
Yeah, well, it worked for the story, so I was willing to just suspend disbelief. That thought crossed my mind while I was watching it, but I'm trying not to be too nitpicky, because with this episode, it would be so easy to do.
Well, so. let me just explain where I'm coming from. When I watch it, though, I oftentimes put myself in the position of the companion. And so I'm thinking, if I were Amy in this position, oh my god, I wouldn't know what to do. Like, how dare she just automatically know what to do?
How dare you be awesome?
Yeah. So there was a little bit of a, when she became awesome in this episode, it was bittersweet for me.
No. Yeah, I mean, her taking charge was really pretty cool. I don't know if this means anything, but when the doctor first goes in to meet Solomon, you know, there's classical music playing in the background. I can't remember the name of the song, but the doctor says that, you know, he was hands 3 and 4. So that's twice now he's claimed to have played in classical music in recordings. So I'm wondering if there's something to that, because, you know, we've got 2 references to Christmas, 2 references to classical music. Like, I'm interested to see what happens in, you know, if they make a reference to it again in A Town Called Mercy, because
I guarantee you they will. I think there's something going on.
I mean, you know, what's the old saying? It's like 2 times is a coincidence, 3 times is a conspiracy, you know? So it's, I can't help but wait to see what's going to happen. If they do it again, then I'm going to pay attention. I'm going to know what's coming, you know?
And I'm going to look for the Christmas thing, too.
Yeah. Well, we already know that it's coming in A Town Called Mercy, so...
Wait. Oh, yeah. Well, there's been a lot... A Town Called Mercy, there's been leaked clips and...
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've seen more of A Town Called Mercy than we have of, like, any other episode before it's aired, ever. Yeah, this is the one that is most heavily featured in the trailers.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, I mean, they'll do something with it like they did with the Asylum of the Daleks. That was just completely out of left field with throwing in Genesis Coleman.
Yeah, that and where, you know, all they show you is, you know, they're in Parliament or whatever, and then that's over in, like, the first 3 minutes. So, we'll see. I mean, at this point, I have faith that I'm not going to be steered wrong. So, let's see. I like the part when the robot shot Brian and, you know, just injured him. And Rory, you know, starts taking care of him. You know, you carry a trowel, I carry a med pack. You know, and then he goes to give him the pain shot, and he goes, "This won't hurt." And stabs him, and Brian's like, "Ow! I lied." It was as soon as it happened, the first thing I thought was back to the Time of Angels when Amy got injured and River went to give her a shot or give her some pain. She's like, "Here, this won't hurt a bit." And, you know, Amy's like, "Ow!" She's like, "There, see, I lied." So it was just like, "Whoa, wait a minute! I didn't realize that was hereditary."
Yep. I noticed that too. And it was just good to see him being a nurse for, you know, doing what he does best.
Reminding you who he is and what it is that he does. You know, and then, I mean, that kind of leads into the doctor asking Amy about a job, and she said that she quit it. And he says, "Well, you quit the one before that too." So I'm wondering how many jobs she's had since the modeling career.
Yeah, I mean, she could. I know she was a kissogram at first, and she must have quit that.
Well, obviously.
We've seen her do a lot of things. She's right, though. You know, once you've been the companion of the doctor, what are you going to do with your life? Like, they never, like, the psychology of these companions, they must be, you know.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I can't blame her, but I did find that very interesting, just that brief little glimpse into, you know, what is life like when you're not with the doctor? You know, I mean, obviously the show centers around the doctor, so the companions are going to be around him. We're not going to, "Oh, this is Rory going off to work, and here's Amy searching the internet for jobs." You know, it's not going to make a show. So, but that stuff does happen to these characters, so it's interesting to kind of get a look into that, you know.
Yeah, it's a little bit more real. The Pawns are very fleshed out characters. Yeah,
they really are, and I think that's one reason why it's they've become such fan favorites, and why it's going to be so brutal when they do make their exit.
Do you want to know something funny? Okay, so I do cocktail waitressing, and I've been thinking about this episode and whatever, and there's the part where Rory's dad has the trowel with him, and Rory says, "You carry a trowel with you." I've been thinking about it. At my job, one of the guys that works there just had a trowel randomly in his belt that day. And I was like, Like how crazy is that? I've never seen anyone with like that, and it was a plot point that no one ever carries one with them. And sure enough, while I'm thinking about that, I see this guy carrying a trowel in his belt.
That's interesting. You should have made some sort of reference to the show just to see if he caught on.
No one I know watches the show.
Well, here's a guy carrying a trowel around New York City. I mean, come on. It's worth a shot.
I was just freaked out. I'm like, is someone testing me? Like, are they, like, it's a really subtle reference to the show.
Yeah, I did notice that, you know, the robots apparently are like training, you know, they can train stormtroopers in marksmanship. The three of them are sitting on top of a dinosaur stationary and they can't hit them.
Yeah.
I found that kind of funny.
Yeah, no, the whole thing, I love that. That's stormtrooper marksmanship. that's why they annoy me, though. These were just comic characters thrown in there for no, you know, they die in this episode. They're, you know.
Yeah, they're comic relief. Yeah, it's, yeah, I mean, none of this stuff is going to last, you know, but they were just there for comic relief, and it was a bit over the top, yeah, but, you know, this whole episode was, so.
So what do you think of Rory's dad? So I know that you are a Harry Potter.
A Potterhead.
Yeah, whatever you fans call yourself.
Wow.
But apparently this guy is some kind of Harry Potter. What I heard was, so he is, the actor's name is Mark Williams, and he's playing Rory Williams' father, and he was also playing Arthur Weasley, playing the father of Arthur Darville. He's Arthur Weasley, the son is Ron Weasley.
Yeah, but the actor who plays Rory is Arthur Darville, so, yeah, it's very wibbly-wobbly, yeah. I loved Brian in this episode. I mean, he was every bit the, you know, very, you know, just average father. You know, he was so tremendously average that it stood out. You know, there was nothing spectacular about him aside from the fact that he's Rory's dad. Yeah.
Well, I think Rory's like that too. He's just so spectacularly average that he grows on you.
Right. Yeah. The two of them were fantastic together. I mean, as soon as you first see them on screen together, you're like, oh yeah, that's definitely a father and son relationship right there. You know, the chemistry between the two of them was great. And I loved watching Brian grow over the episode. You know, he goes from being very, you know, confused and frustrated to accepting it and then becoming proactive. You know, so it's like over the course of this episode, you can see him start to, you know, acquire all the traits that every companion of the Doctor acquires. He just does it in a much more condensed timeline, and it was just kind of cool watching that.
Yeah, that's what I've said it before, like, I just can't articulate it properly. Like, that's my favorite part of what the companions do, like, the moment that they realize, like, who the Doctor is and stuff, and then decide to be a part of that. In these episodes, kind of like, you know, with where he, Girl in the Fireplace, where he just shows her everything, or he does it with Craig, too, in season 5. Like, this guy, Mark Williams, you know, he gets it all at once, and that's always my favorite kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I
still unable to articulate. I understand what I'm trying to say.
I think you got it across okay. Don't worry about it. I think that, you know, I would like to see more of Brian. I don't think we're going to, simply because of the short amount of time we have left, but. Yeah, I mean, he was a great character, and I wouldn't mind seeing him again.
Yeah.
The other two that we had in this, you know, Rydell, who's a big game hunter in Africa in the early 1900s, and, you know, Queen Nefertiti of Egypt. I felt like they really were just tacked on so that they could have some guest stars.
Yeah, they were. They're very one dimensional. Rydell introduced himself that way too, right? They're like, yeah. "Who are you, Rydell? I'm a big game hunter in early 1900s."
Yeah, so it's like, you know, there really wasn't much there except to add a couple more characters, which just kind of made things very convoluted. You know, I mean, the only quality I saw out of it was, okay, they had Nefertiti as a plot point so that Solomon could get back on his ship.
Right, and it could have been anything. They could have saved one of the dinosaurs or something. Like, you know, it didn't have to necessarily be Nefertiti.
Yeah.
You could have completely removed these two from the story and had this be just the Doctor, Amy, Rory, maybe Mark Williams, or whatever the hell his name is, and had this episode without these two. So I liked them. I liked them for what they were. Like, they weren't unlikable characters, but remove them and the episode loses nothing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I didn't have anything against the characters, against the actors. Nothing. It just, they didn't really add anything to the story. That was my whole problem with them. But, you know, I didn't have anything against them. So before you start, you know, go ahead and erase the hate mail. I can hear you typing it already.
Because everyone's kind of bringing this up, that Nefertiti historically kind of disappears from the historical record at a certain point. So it's a kind of a cool, again, I love when shows do this where it ties into actual reality, where the Doctor, it's as good of an explanation as any that Nefertiti disappears from the historical record because she ran off with the Doctor.
And yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it is kind of cool when they do that. I mean, this show started out with the purpose of teaching history and science to kids. You know, that was the whole reason why the BBC gave Doctor Who the green light back in 63. I loved the episodes where they tie it into history. You know, Girl in the Fireplace was a tremendous, I mean, I'd never heard of Madame de Pompadour before that episode. Now I'm a friggin' expert. You know, I mean, it's, when they do stuff like that, it sparks interest, and, you know, it's like, okay, I've seen the fiction, I understand how it fits into this story, how did it actually play out? You know, so I love when they do that kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, that seeing her at the end with Rydell was kind of like, oh, so that's where she got to, you know?
That's what her hair looks like under that crown. That's what I was thinking.
as soon as she walked out of the tent and I saw the hair, the first thing I thought was the scene from Firefly when you first see Shepherd Book with his hair all poofed out.
Oh, my God, yeah, and the river freaks out.
That was the first thing I thought was... Oh, sorry. I'm mixing my geekdoms here.
wait. Can we just, one more thing? I got to wear my Kiss Shiny Spacecraft Repair shirt today because it came today.
Nice. So,
like, yeah.
I wanted to get that. I didn't manage to get to it. No, I'm actually wearing my Tenet's Timepiece Repair and Timey Wimey Things t-shirt today.
Nice.
Yeah, we really need to get sponsored by some t-shirt companies. let's see. Okay. The scene where Rory comes up with the idea, I can't even remember what the idea was now, when the Doctor kisses him. It's like, that's brilliant, kisses him. Then the computer says, they were asking about defenses.
Yeah, ships usually have some kind of defense or something. Yeah.
And then he comes back and says, no defenses, and he starts slapping Rory. He's like, well, there, he got my hopes up. What'd you go and do that for? So, you know, the Doctor...
I loved this scene. I don't care that they just threw that in for people like me who are like, oh my God, Mad Kid Star is there.
I mean, it was just kind of... Yeah, I mean, it was fun, and, you know, the Doctor is now 3 for 3 on pawns. Yeah. Brian better watch out.
That's why they're different. There's people and there are pawns.
Oh, yeah. So, all right. Let's go ahead and talk about the elephant in the room. The line where the Doctor says, you know, when he's talking to Amy, when they're talking about how he vanishes all the time, and you know, he looks at her and says, you'll be there till the end of me. And Amy says, or vice versa.
Yeah.
I mean, as soon as they did that, I was like, I'm sitting there watching the episode, having fun, enjoying myself, and then get hit upside the head with the clue by four. You know, I was like,
exactly. Yeah, it's so blatant. It's just.
But yeah, I mean,
over the head.
That does give credence to the what you were saying before about how this is, you know, the Doctor could possibly have seen the end already, because the look on Matt Smith's face at that point was very much, I can't believe you just said that. What do you, you know? And you can kind of read the between the lines and fill a lot of that information in there. So,
yeah, definitely. I mean, there, of course, you could argue, you know, he just saw the spoilers online and thinks eventually maybe someday they'll be going, and that's why he. But he acts so differently in this episode than he has normally acted before that I think that, coupled with the way that he reacts right here when she says that, leads me to believe, nah, like, he's already seen the end of her.
Yeah, I mean, it's, it definitely does feed into that a little bit, so I'm not sure. I'm not gonna call it, not yet, but it does seem to fit. But yeah, I mean, that was just a very, very sobering line for such a fun episode. You know, and it may not be to the casual fan who knows nothing and has no internet access, but you know, to anyone else, it was just such a downer. You know, kind of like, oh, I was having fun with this episode, and you had to go and remind me about the horrible fate I'm in store for in 3 weeks. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. I do kind of like how they're still getting that overall story threaded through all the episodes. I mean, that's one of my favorite styles of storytelling, is when you can take the 1 week standalone episode and tie them together into a grand story arc.
I like that they're doing this, and I think, again, I don't really particularly like this episode, but I do notice that they have kept to their word of making each episode so cinematic that it feels like you're watching a little film every time you watch it. So, and again, the casual fan could watch each episode and see that little mini cinematic experience, or they could have seen 50 years worth of episodes and be picking up on that thread that is obviously running through these.
Yeah.
So definitely, like, they're kind of standalone, but there's this thread.
Yeah. Well, all right. When the Doctor gets onto Solomon's spaceship and fries the robots, did you catch what they did?
They sing Daisy Daisy.
Yeah, they sing Daisy Bell. I missed it the first time I watched it, but when I went to watch it a second time, I was watching, I heard it, and I was like, oh my god, that is fantastic. I love that.
Yeah, this is a reference to 2001 A Space Odyssey, correct?
Yeah, yes. When the computer starts going nuts and starts singing Daisy Bell, it's, yeah. And it was just such a background kind of thing, you know, they didn't make reference to it, they didn't say it, it was just, let's throw this in there and see who catches it. Yeah. I thought it was great, but. So, and then, you know, the Doctor obviously puts his plan in motion and gets things going. When he goes to leave, you know, Solomon's like, you know, anything you want, I'll get you anything. What do you want? You know, and the Doctor looks at him and goes, did Silurians beg you to stop? Yeah. And then he leaves. This was a very dark move for the Doctor. You know, he
for sure. when you just said a few minutes ago the elephant in the room, I thought this is what you were going to say about it. The Doctor flat out kills someone in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest, it's not the first time that it's happened. You know, I mean, he's killed people tons of times, but this was just, he could have very easily saved him. You know, I would argue that it was a direct kill. Yes, granted, he let him loose and let the missiles do their job. He put the tracking device on the ship. So it was the Doctor's actions that led to Solomon's death. So, I mean, that's murder in my book.
Yeah. 100%. No, I mean, Solomon deserved to die. There's not... It's not that.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
just,
yeah.
This is for the Doctor. This, I feel this is a big turning point.
Well, I mean, it's... The Doctor is a very two-sided kind of character. I mean, that. All right. I think Matt Smith put it best when he was talking about playing the Doctor. He said, that's what interests me about the Doctor, because actually look at the Doctor, at the blood on the man's hands. 900 years, countless very selfish choices, and he's literally blown planets up, his own race, you know, that's all on his hands. Which is why I think he has to make silly jokes and wear a fez, because if he didn't, he'd hang himself. You know, and that's...
Yeah.
That is the Doctor rolled up in a nutshell, is, you know, this is the kind of thing he's capable of. This is the kind of thing he does on a regular basis if he's not kept in check. So it's not that far of a stretch for him to do this. It was just so out of context, or so out of, you know, what we've seen recently, that it was a jarring reminder of who it is that we actually are dealing with.
Yeah, and plus, I think you're right, he's definitely killed before. It's just, we've seen such an evolution from the Ninth Doctor, who had killed and was kind of battle-scarred about it, to Tenth Doctor dealing with all these things, and like, he actually does usually manage to save everyone, despite his insistence that he can't. And then we go back to the Eleventh Doctor, who maybe is a little bit more realistic about it all, and... You know, this is just someone who doesn't live through the episode.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... I think that this actually does kind of feed into, you know, to the whole theory about the Doctor being privy to information that is coming. You know, because it's... you can always see him get kind of dark when he loses a companion. You know, when, you know, after Rose left or was taken from him, he was very emotionally scarred. You know, he was hurt. When Martha decided to leave, he was hurt. He was, you know, had trouble with it. When Donna, you know, when he had to wipe Donna's memory, this is what led to, you know, the Time Lord Victorious. You know, when he thought that he could control everything and, you know, went down a very dark path for a little bit. You know, and you've got all these characters who have either been taken from him or left him or were forced to forget him altogether. And, I mean, I've always wondered why they made such a big deal about Amy Pond, the girl who waited. Okay, well, you know, she didn't really. She went on with her life. But the fact that she was still there is what made her important now. Because everyone else that he's dealt with recently has left, has gone, has been taken, whatever. Amy has been there. No matter how many times he's left, she's always waiting. So I can understand, you know, if he has seen her death, or, you know, if he's seen himself lose her, I can see him making this kind of choice very, very easily.
That's, yeah, that's very true, that it could be connected to the loss of her. That, yeah, great point.
Yeah, so, I don't know, I mean, we'll see what happens. You know, I'm not, like I said, I'm not putting my money on anything just yet. But it definitely does seem very, very possible. But, so I did like, at the end, how Brian decides to go traveling. You know, 'cause they made reference to it at the beginning, where, you know, he hates traveling. The only place that he'll ever go is to go play golf. You know, and then you see him sitting on at the door of the TARDIS, looking down at the planet.
I didn't get this part. Were all those postcards from him? Did he like travel around with the Doctor to all these places?
I don't know if he traveled with the Doctor or if he just went traveling, but. He also didn't put a picture saying, here I am, with the Siluria postcard. So I'm not sure. All that was kind of confusing.
Yeah, they were called the Silurians because there was a Silurian period, not because there's a planet of Siluria.
No, but if the Silurians had left the planet, had the
Yeah, if they found a new homeworld or something.
It probably would be called Siluria.
So having the dinosaurs on there would make sense.
And so the doctor probably took the dinosaurs, put them on a planet, and said, "I'm naming it, in honor of these people." So, I mean, that makes sense, but I don't know, was the postcard from the doctor or was it from Brian? They didn't specify that.
Well, all the pictures of Brian had him in it, so that was,
Yeah, so I'm like, okay, that could be from the doctor. I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things where it really didn't get explained, but at the same time, it didn't need to. It was just, that was kind of this is what happened to the dinosaurs, go about your day. So it didn't really need to be said what happened. It was just kind of like, okay, we want to make reference to the dinosaurs are good, aside from Tricey, who's rotting because they got shot.
Yeah.
Bastard.
Saddest point of the
But, yeah. I mean, like I said, all in all, this was a fun episode. That's about all that, that you can give it at this point.
Yeah, I give it that it was fun, but that wasn't enough for me. I thought that if we're only going to get to see 5 episodes before the Christmas episode, I would like it to be more than this. And I know I'm in the minority saying that.
Well, I mean, looking forward, I think A Town Called Mercy is going to be, at least entertaining. I think they're going to have some good stuff in this episode. But at the very least, we've had our action movie. We've had our Saturday afternoon sitting on the couch movie. Now we're going to get our Western. So I think it's going to be, I think it'll be okay. I'm not going to set my bar too incredibly high just in case, but
I think I like Western. So I think it'll be good.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we've got The Power of Three, which I still don't know anything about.
This is the one that they're keeping under wraps the most. There's been no... the trailers, you see, there's barely any clips from that, yeah.
So, I mean, it's... I don't know. The more I think about it, the more I'm starting to give this theory of yours some credit, because, it could actually be the Doctor saying goodbye to Amy and Rory, and that's why it's being kept so quiet.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they can't return in the 5th episode. It's just that might not be our emotional episode like we've been expecting.
Oh, man. Great. Now I've got to stress out about this for another week. Awesome. But, I think we've got some excitement coming our ways. I think this was a decent breather. You had the culmination of the waiting in Asylum of the Daleks, which was fantastic. Then you've got, okay, now we're just going to have some fun, bring you back into the, let you catch your breath before we really hit it. So, I'm excited for the rest of them.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited, and we only have one more day to go, so.
And by the time you're listening to this, you've probably already seen it, so, just wait until Tuesday or Wednesday and download the next podcast, and we'll talk about that one. Hopefully we'll have our helmet regulator fixed at that point and, land on the proper day. All right. Well, do you have anything else to say in wrapping up?
I think that's it.
All right. Well, this has been episode 5 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us again later and we'll talk about the next one.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week on iTunes or at gallifreypublicradio.podbean.com. Have something you want to say or just want to say hello? Send us an email at gallifreypublicradio@gmail.com or leave us a comment on iTunes. You can also find us on Twitter at Gallifrey Radio. You can also find our hosts at @_Melissa or at @Scopehound. Music by Dan Doodly Doo and Retcon Addict.